The murders of officers Igor Soldo and Alan Beck in June stunned our community, but they also added our city to a very bleak list, a list of places that have lost law enforcement officers in violent acts this year. And compared to last year, that list has grown. The number of on-duty deaths of officers nationwide is up this year by almost a third over last year. That's according to the National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial Fund. And the number of shooting deaths of officers is up by 56%. So how do acts of violence against officers affect the law enforcement community? Well, we're going to learn a little bit more about that in this conversation. And we start with Sergeant Chrissy Kuhn, who serves on the North Las Vegas Police Department. Sergeant Kuhn, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
You come from a law enforcement family. I mean, this is in your, you know, in the family tree. When you were a child, when your father, who's also in law enforcement, went off to work every morning, did you worry?
Well, it was actually my mom.
Your mom.
I want to say that we were actually the first mother-daughter succession in Nevada. I haven't confirmed that, but she did 18 years in law enforcement for the North Las Vegas Police Department. And, you know, there were specific moments in my childhood that stand out that I absolutely remember stressing out about her going to work. And one of those was during the 1992 Rodney King riots that had spilled over into Las Vegas and North Las Vegas for a period of time. And I did. I took a police scanner to school. I was in the sixth grade, and wow. I stressed out about whether or not she was going to be okay.
Now, for those of us who may only be barely drinking age or a little bit younger, the Rodney King riots. So I was in Pennsylvania at that time. I mean, remember them clearly, but I was in Pennsylvania. That's 2,500 miles away. What was the impact?
Well,
in the Western U.S. in here in Las Vegas.
In Los Angeles, the rioting was overwhelming. And some of that had spilled over into some of the neighborhoods. It was more neighborhood specific in Las Vegas and North Las Vegas. And in some of those neighborhoods, they were burning cars, they were turning cars over, they were shooting at police officers.
There was rioting here.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Hence the police scanner going to school with you every day.
Yes. And you know, the difference as a child is I had seen my mom, you know, dress out for work every day. And when you're going to work in a situation where you're, you know, as a police officer every day that you go to work, there's a potential that something could happen. But when you're going to work in a situation where you know it's more of a high risk situation, like during the riots, they don different gear. And so watching her, you know, pack up her riot gear and make sure that she had all of her riot gear and you know, different gear that she would need out there on the street in order to go and police these riots. It was just different. And it was, as a 12-year-old watching it, it was very dramatic in my mind, watching her prepare herself to go to work those days.
How did you talk with your mom about that?
You know, it's funny. Back then, we didn't really talk about it. I remember growing up, and it was just, you know, something mom did. And I know that I was fearful for her when she was there. And I remember her telling me everything's going to be fine. But, you know, shortly after that, one of the other moments in her career that stands out for me was when Raul Elizondo was shot and killed in North Las Vegas. And he was the first police officer in North Las Vegas to be shot in the line of duty. And watching her and her friends and our law enforcement family mourn his death. As a child, I was about 15 years old, and that was very impactful for me because it, you know, the gravity of the fact that, wait a second, this is what my mom does for a living, and there is that possibility that I could be that family, I could be that daughter mourning her mom.
As you got older, was it easier to talk about, or was it more difficult?
I think as it became... it became easier to talk about because, you know, I think that over the last 2 decades, probably there's sort of been a cultural change in law enforcement where we're starting to acknowledge, you know, that officers have feelings and we can talk about them, and you know that their officers are fearful, and it isn't the fear that defines us; it's the courage that we have to overcome that fear to go to work every day. But I think that we've seen this movement where it's okay to start talking about things like that. And out of that, you see, you know, law enforcement moms and dads that can have those discussions now with their kids.
And speaking of law enforcement moms and dads, there was a point where you told, probably had to tell your parents, your mom, that you wanted to follow in her line of work. Why did you decide to do that?
You know, it's such a part of who I am. I was born and raised in Las Vegas. I was born and raised around the North Las Vegas Police Department. It was my family. And growing up, I remember vividly going, I'm never going to do that, ever. And then once I started to get a little bit older, I realized the value and the rewards that my mom reaped from her law enforcement career and how satisfying it is when you can go to work every day and help the community and know that you're serving the community. And I think that those were things that as I started to mature, I went, that's why she does this. You know, that's why she's in law enforcement. That makes sense. And then you sort of feel drawn to that as a law enforcement kid. That's what you're raised. That's what you know.
Well, here we are now, and you've got your own family.
I do.
You've got a young teen. When the shootings of Officers Beck and Soldo happened, did you flash back to the mid-90s, the Alessandro shooting? What did you think?
I did. I have a 13-year-old, and I have 4-year-old twins. And, you know, that age where he's so much more aware of what's being reported. And as soon as the news flashes come out in this day and age, you know, he has a smartphone. He gets those updates. He knows what's going on. It isn't something that we can hide and hey, we'll talk about this when I get home. You know, instantly the text messages start coming in. Mom, are you okay? Because I was at work that day. And I actually was in sergeant training, so I was on patrol. And our jurisdiction borders that Northeast Area Command. And so he was very aware of the fact that I was out there working on the street that day. And Mom, are you okay? Mom, are you in this? Mom, are you know? And being first and foremost available to, yes, I'm here. Yes, I'm okay. Calm down. We'll talk about this when I get home. Everything's going to be fine. You know, just to calm those fears in him. But the reality was it was probably the first time in his life where he's really realize the gravity of what I do.
So it's a generation later, you know, and you're remembering what went through your head. So with that in your back pocket, what did you say to your son?
Well, you know, that's a difficult one. I'm not sure if it was right, wrong, or otherwise, but, you know, you just speak from the heart. And I know when I was talking to him, I went home later, and one of the things I was shocked to find out is that he had started to reach out to his friends that he knew their moms or dads were police officers, and particularly they worked for the Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department. So his core group of supporters actually were banding together to talk about, hey, is your dad? Have you talked to your dad? Have you talked to your mom? Is she okay? Is he okay? Is everything going to be okay? And between them, I think they had all acknowledged that their parents were okay. And it brought up a conversation amongst their friends. So when I talked to him about it later, I just expressed to him that, you know, he has to just be open with me. And when he's fearful in moments like that, make sure that he's not bottling that up and let's talk about it and bring that to my attention. You know, there isn't really anything you can say to calm their fears. The reality of what we do is that we face that danger every day. You know, I talk to him and I tell him that, you know, we train. And we train with the intent of avoiding exactly, you know, a situation like that. And sometimes our training doesn't do any good, or it's completely out, something happens, it's completely outside of our control. And as a parent, I want to calm his fears and that we're somewhat prepared. But the reality is that, you know, and especially in these officers' case, sometimes you can't prepare for something like that. It just happens. And that in the event that something like that happens, you know, I've talked to him that there's a plan and he will be well taken care of. And, you know, there's not going to be this, oh, my gosh, what happens now?
If you're just joining us, we're talking about the increase in on-duty officer deaths this year, and in particular, the increase in shooting deaths across the nation and, of course, in the Las Vegas metro area as well. We're talking with Sergeant Chrissy Kunas with the North Las Vegas Police Department. Also joining us is Chris Collins. He's Executive Director of the Las Vegas Police Protective Association. We think we lost Chris Collins, and we're going to try to get him back in just a couple of minutes. We'll turn next to Bill Souza, who is a professor in the Department of Criminal Justice at UNLV. Bill, welcome to the program.
Good morning.
Good morning. Do we have any idea why violence against officers experiences the occasional surges we seem to be seeing this year?
Well, it's a good question. Obviously the number is up this year, and that's something to be concerned about and something to watch. But if we look at the trend over the last 10 years, the trend of officer deaths is actually down. Certainly from the high point in the 1970s, it's way down. And in fact, if you look at the 2013 number, we haven't seen that number since the 1940s. Overall, the trend is down, but there are years in there where we see blips up. And it's difficult to pinpoint a reason sometimes. Criminals are unpredictable, because of that unpredictability, there's considerable variability in the number from year to year, even though the trend itself is down.
One of the things that was in the news this year was the standoff in Bunkerville. At the ranch of rancher Clive and Bundy, and the couple who attacked officers Beck and Soldo spent time at the Bundy Ranch. They were asked to leave, but nevertheless, they had some similarly anti-government views. And the case of the shooters, theirs was a violent perspective. And I'm wondering what you make of that. Could the increase in anti-government rhetoric have anything to do with the increase in the number of attacks we've seen across the country?
It could, but I think we should remember that when it comes to these types of acts, it's very often the reasons are often local in nature. While there may be factors that influence the number of officer deaths, felonious deaths, in one part of the country, that's not necessarily the case that occurs in other parts of the country. Thankfully, when you think of the millions and millions of interactions that police have with citizens every day, the chance of one of those interactions giving rise to an officer injury is very, very low. Thankfully, the number of incidents is very low. But because the number is low, it's difficult to predict. It's difficult to predict the number.
Mm-hmm. Sergeant Chrissy Kuhn had mentioned the standoff in Bunkerville a little bit earlier this year. Are there signs in the community that lead police officers to just kind of be a little bit extra careful, extra vigilant when scanning the horizon for trouble? I mean, obviously, a highly publicized standoff like that gets everybody's attention. But are there more subtle things that police officers tend to look for as signs that there may be a heightened chance of trouble?
Well, I think one of the things that we try and teach our officers, and both as a sergeant and leader of a squad, I want my officers to go out every day with that heightened sense of awareness all the time. Expect the unexpected. Expect that the danger's out there and it's coming straight for you. And if they operate in that mode all the time, they'll go home. They'll tend to go home at night. The statistics should fall on their side. Mm-hmm. The reality is, though, is sometimes that's misinterpreted by the community or misinterpreted by the public as, an officer just being overly aggressive or, they didn't need to treat me like this or I'm not a criminal. And, trying to get the public to understand, certainly in the wake of something like that, that officers do have that heightened sense of awareness. And there's a lot on their mind when they're going to work in the wake of a tragedy like that.
Now, we are joined by Chris Collins, Executive Director of Las Vegas Police Protective Association. Okay, well, I understand we lost Chris Collins' line again. Our apologies for that. We're going to try to connect with him again in just a moment. We're going to turn next to John DiCarlo. He is a professor at John Jay College of Criminal Justice. And prior to that, he served as a police chief. John DiCarlo, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
You have said we should keep numbers, such as the number of shootings of police officials this year, in perspective. How dangerous is police work compared to other professions?
Well, the fact, first, that we lose any police officers is a travesty. But when we do keep it in perspective, we find that it is not one of the most dangerous jobs in the United States. There are jobs like farming and logging and commercial fishing that actually per 100,000 people lose a lot more people. However, policing, as you know, is a form of government, and it is the most visible form of government. So that what we find is that when we're attacking police officers, it is usually sometimes related to an attack on the underlying structure of government.
Many of your students at John Jay aspire to become police officers or to work in law enforcement generally. When the shootings happened in Las Vegas in June, or when other high-profile attacks happen on police nationally, how does that affect your students?
I have not seen a diminution of enthusiasm by my students, as a matter of fact, I have not seen a great negative effect by all of the police officers that I work with on a most daily basis. They accept the danger that is inherent in the job, and when we're facing danger, we all have to take that home to our families. But I have not really seen, Dave, a diminishment of enthusiasm and wanting and people that are wanting to go on the job.
Now, as I understand it, we've got Chris Collins with us. Chris, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Fantastic. Thank you. Chris Collins is the executive director of the Las Vegas Police Protective Association. Chris, welcome back to the program.
Thank you. I appreciate your weighing.
A little bit earlier this year, following the shootings in Las Vegas of Officers Beck and Soldo, we spoke to former Sheriff Bill Young about the shootings, and this is a little bit of what he had to say.
I predict that there'll be officers that will look at this, sit down with their families, and say, you know, I've been lucky so far. I think I'll hang it up.
So I'm wondering, Chris Collins, have you heard of any increase in officers retiring or at least talking openly about retiring since the shootings?
There is talk within the organization at Metro that some of the officers, younger officers, senior officers, believe, just as former Sheriff Young said, that it's the rules of engagement, I guess, if you will, with the suspects have changed and then it's time to retire.
How has this affected your membership generally? What are you hearing them say?
There are several officers in all the area commands that have contacted us and asked us to help them with, reaching out to the Nevada Public Employees Retirement System, calculating what their benefits would be if they had any coming at all, at this point in their career. And, they have just, thought for themselves, if you will, that with this lawlessness, this new lawlessness and violence and criminals, that it's no longer a job that they deem as worthy.
Mm-hmm. Do the members of the Protective Association worry about their safety more now than they did 2 months ago? Do they feel a little bit more like targets, and that this is a more violent era that we seem to be entering into here?
Well, I think it's clearly a more violent era, and I was listening to one of your other speakers, talk that, we lose more commercial fishermen and stuff, and that's without a doubt true. Those people are killed in work-related accidents that don't generally have anything to do with the violence of another person. Law enforcement today is under attack by criminals. If you look at the National Law Enforcement Memorial's statistics, they will tell you that deaths by gunfire, death by assault, is up in our country right now. The law enforcement community is under an attack like we've never been before. I agree with the statement that we are the most visible face of government, and let's face it, we are the portion of government that has to enforce the rules that government lays down, and right now society's not happy with government.
Mm-hmm. John DiCarlo, just a few moments ago, Chris Collins, had suggested that crime generally, a lot of the overall crime statistics seem to be trending down, and yet we do have the sense that it's more dangerous now. Why so? Why do you think that is?
Well, it's like I said, I think it stems from, and as Mr. DiCarlo said, that we are the face of the government, and right now, polls across America show that generally America is not happy with the national government, their state government, their local government, and yet law enforcement is the tool, if you will, that is put in place to enforce the rules that those entities set forth for us to live by. So the anger that is portrayed upon the government is portrayed upon police officers.
John DiCarlo, as Chris Collins is saying, face of government. Is that how many of us see police and law enforcement officials?
Dave, as I said before, and I unfortunately can't hear what my colleague Chris is saying, But, police are the most visible form of government. When we drive down the street, we very seldom see the mayor or other governmental officials. So police are out there and in contact with the public every day. There are 18,500 police departments in the United States. They serve 318 million people. There are about a million officers in the United States. So there are more of them usually than any other form of government. And they're out there and they're trying to maintain order in our communities, and they remain highly visible to the general public, and that's a fact that has always been since the organization of policing in the United States.
Well, and if the hostility toward government is just as Chris Collins has been describing it as of late, that seems to contrast with the notion that violent crime statistics in the country are down overall, shooting deaths of officers up.
They really are. I mean, violent crime and crime in general, not just violent crime, but property crime also, since 1994, has trended down and is almost, we're down to levels now that we really haven't seen since the 1950s. As an example, in New York City, in 1991, there were about 2,700 homicides. Last year, we saw around 311, I think it was. So we're seeing a general trend in the United States that criminologists really are scurrying to explain of why crime is going down. But it is going down. And when we look at officers killed, the trend on that is also heading, in 2011, we saw 72 officers in the United States killed. In 2012, which was the last year that we have full statistics for, we saw 48. And in 2013, which is just preliminary data, 27 officers were killed across the United States. And a lot of them, we have to remember, were killed in automobile wrecks. And losing any officer is a terrible thing. But so that's how I would reconcile. I don't know if the proliferation of the way that we experience news nowadays it colors our judgment about how we think about government and people's perceptions of government and how quickly items go out. But certainly a lot of it is perception. When I ask people generally, is crime going up or down, they almost invariably tell me that it's going up when, statistics are telling us that it is indeed going down and down quite a bit.
Mm-hmm. I want to turn back to you, Sergeant Chrissy Kuhn. We talked a little bit earlier about your family. You talked about that relationship both with your mother and with your son. And I want to ask a little bit about you as well. You're not in the field full time, but I'm wondering if you've changed the way you work in response to the shootings of earlier this year.
Well, I think one thing that's important to point out that, typically it's a coping mechanism for fellow law enforcement to evaluate different situations where an officer's been, died in the line of duty and go, okay, what could I do differently to make sure I stay safe? And I think that what hit the law enforcement family the hardest out of the tragedy that we had several weeks ago was that there really wasn't anything that these two officers could have done that could have prepared them more for what happened. They were absolutely executed. And I think that when you talk about, how the law enforcement family is coping with that, typically we go, well, if it happened in an auto crash, well, I don't drive like that. Or if it happened in a fight, well, there's tactics that I can learn that are going to make me safer out there. So for me, the very next day, having to come in and brief a squad full of officers that I'm going to send out into the field to go to work that day, and there's not really any brand new information that I can give them to make them any safer than they were the day before, that's what's difficult for the fellow law enforcement officers to try and cope with a tragedy like this. And, much like Chris was talking about, so that sort of spurs people maybe considering retiring or, they're faced with the gravity of what the reality of what we actually do.
Bill Sousa, if police officers feel they may be under fire, and perhaps under fire in the seemingly random kind of way that Officers Beck and Soldo were and the manner in which they were killed, how does that affect their relationship with the community?
Well, first, there's not a lot of evidence, certainly on the national scale, that there are increases in use of force, so there are increases in negative contacts with citizens after an event like this. And thankfully, these types of events are extremely rare. So there's not a lot of evidence that there's a reactivity on the part of officers from that perspective. Officers are trained to handle unpredictable and situations, and the training very often kicks in. So you don't see that. Now, it's very difficult, of course, from the officer's perspective to not feel, obviously, for the events like this. But again, the training is such to handle tragic situations. And if we look at the data across the nation, it seems to bear out.
Sergeant Chrissy Kuhn, yesterday was another violent day in the Valley. A Henderson police officer was attacked and stabbed. Doesn't seem to be related to any political views or things like that. But every time you hear about that or you read about that, do you ever think about retiring yourself?
No. I came into this field of work because of the rewards that I reap personally for being able to serve the community and protect those that can't protect themselves. And so when I hear about things like that, and I have other family members that are in law enforcement, we'll talk about it. And, I worry for my family members that work for the Henderson Police Department. I have family over there. But at the end of the day, it's what we come into this job to do. And if there's a way that I can help the community or I can be there to support my fellow law enforcement officers, that's a commitment that I've made. And that's a life choice that I've made. And, the tragedy from several weeks back, although heartbreaking, and our entire police department and law enforcement family across this valley was mourning those deaths, I think that you see a lot of officers that stand up united against that violence and go, that's exactly why I'm in this field, is so that I can try and protect the community against people like that.
Sergeant Chrissy Kuhn is with the North Las Vegas Police Department. Bill Souza is a professor at the Department of Criminal Justice at UNLV. Also with us, John DiCarlo, professor of the John Jay College of Criminal Justice, and Chris Collins, executive director of the Las Vegas Police Protective Association. Thank you all very much for being with us.
Well, thank you.